Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee Kap. Hello. Welcome to all of you guys. Welcome back. Nice to see all of you guys here. And welcome to everyone online. This is our evening session where we're going to start with loving kindness meditation. And then our topic tonight is talking about personal existence view and helping you understand how to eliminate this pollution from the mind. I'm going to explain to you what this is. I'm going to explain to you the symptoms that you'll experience because of this, so you can see that you have this personal existence view, this pollution in the mind. Then we're going to talk about the solutions of how to uproot it and eliminate it. Then I'm going to share with you how to know that you've actually eliminated it from the mind once it's eliminated. But we're going to start with meditation like we do with each one of our sessions. And then since this is the last time we're going to be doing breathing mindfulness meditation and loving kindness meditation as a group for this particular retreat, I'm going to open up to any and all questions that you guys have related to meditation so that you can get all your questions answered about breathing mindfulness meditation and loving kindness meditation. We're going to do meditation tomorrow as part of our retreat, but this will be the last time that we're going to be doing breathing mindfulness meditation and loving kindness meditation. So I thought I'd pause for a moment, give you guys a chance to ask any and all questions after meditation that you have about these two styles of meditation. So if you'd like to join, we're going to lead in with the chants. Then I'll guide you in the breathing mindfulness. Then we'll have that period of time where it'll just be quiet for a little bit. Then we'll go into the loving kindness and then back to breathing mindfulness and back to the chanting.
Arahaṃ sammasambuddho bhagavā Bhūtaṃ bhagavantaṃ apivātiyami Savakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti bisu bhagavā Arahaṃ sammasambuddho Vicacaraṇaṃ sammuddho Sakkhato rokkhavitu Anuttaro purisa Dhammasati satatava manusana Otto Bhagavati.
With the lower body and hands and arms comfortable, in the upper body erect, just close the eyes and start breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Here you're just looking to establish the breath. A nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. Not forced or controlled. Just a gradual inhale through the nose. Experiencing the full breath. And then when you're ready, exhale out through the nose. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. Your breath may not match up with the guidance that I'm providing, and that's okay. This is your practice. Just here for guidance. You can use this voice as a reminder that whenever you get to your next inhale, breathing gradually through the nose, developing a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. And then, whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose, experiencing the full breath. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. With the breath well established, start fixating the mind on the breath. Either the sound of the breath coming into the nose, or the sensation of air moving over the skin into the nose. The breath is the present moment. Fixate the mind on the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. With the mind fixated on the breath, whenever you notice that it moves off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. No need to observe the thought, label it, judge it, analyze it, or even try to figure out where it's coming from. Whenever you notice that the mind is moved off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. Breathing in out. I'm going to be quiet now and let you do this work of focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. Then I'll be back with more guidance on loving kindness meditation. You have nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. No one needs you right now. This is your time to focus on the breath. Breathing in. And out. Continuing to breathe in through the nose and out through the nose. Whenever you get to your next out breath, repeat these affirmations in the mind on the out breath. May I be peaceful. May I be safe. May I be well. May I be free of all discontentedness in the suffering it causes. May mom and dad be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. May my family and friends be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. May all those who have caused me harm be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. May all those who I have harmed be peaceful. May they be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. May all beings, wherever they reside, be peaceful. May all beings be safe. May they be well. May they be free of all discontentedness and the suffering it causes. Now go back to breathing mindfulness meditation, focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. Breathing in. And out.
Arahang sama sambuto makewa Potang makewanhang apiwate ami Sawakato Mahakyawata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipano Mahakyawato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Namo Arhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Iti biso mahakava arahaṃ sammāsambuddho vicacaraṇaṃ sammuddho sakkhato rokkhavitto Anuttaro purisa dhamma sati satatava manusra poto bhagavate.
If you guys would like to slowly make your way out of meditation. Okay, let's talk about meditation for a little bit. Let me ask you guys a question in order to get us started. As I mentioned, I'm going to open up to any questions that you guys have, but let me ask you guys some questions. What are the goals of breathing mindfulness meditation? What are you trying to accomplish when you're doing breathing mindfulness meditation? Anybody? Singleness of mind, practicing concentration. What else? Building awareness of mind or mindfulness. Yep, the four foundations of mindfulness. What else are you doing? Letting go of what? Thoughts. And what is that doing? By cutting, training the mind to do what? What is that called when the mind's longing and yearning? That's the result. The craving. So you're arising mindfulness in singleness of mind or concentration. That's the wholesome quality that you're cultivating. And then you're eliminating the unwholesome quality of what? Craving, desire, attachment, right? So that's the goal of breathing mindfulness meditation. Your goal isn't to eliminate your thoughts, right? You can't eliminate your thoughts as long as you're alive, but you can gain discipline and control of the mind that when you have an unwholesome thought, you can cut it off. In meditation, you're cutting off any and all thoughts because you're exercising the mind. You're trying to train it to easily let go. But then in daily life, you're only going to cut off the unwholesome thoughts that arise. Okay, you guys good with that? Okay, what about loving kindness meditation? What's the goal of loving kindness meditation? Eliminate ill will, right? Anger, hatred, ill will, and all those lesser versions like frustration, agitation, annoyance, all of that, right? It also helps you eliminate the negative self-talk, the diminishing of yourself, Okay. What are you cultivating in loving kindness meditation? This one's the easy one, right? What is loving kindness? Say it louder. Did you say wanting the well-being? Or what? I didn't hear you 100%. You said wanting, right? Having a genuine interest in seeing all beings be well. The wanting is the craving, the longing, the yearning. That's what you're not interested in. You're interested in having this interest to see all beings be well. Right? That's what loving kindness is, the active goodwill towards all beings. Now, that breathing mindfulness meditation that we do just a little bit at the end of loving kindness meditation, that's there for you if you need it. You don't have to do that necessarily, right? If you're noticing in loving kindness meditation that loving kindness is permeating the mind, which this is actually quite normal as you develop your loving kindness meditation more and more, you might notice that you're in meditation doing loving kindness and all of this loving kindness is permeating the mind. Your mind's filled with loving kindness. You might not decide to go to the breathing mindfulness meditation at the end because that's cutting things off, cutting it off and cutting it off. You might be interested in allowing that loving kindness to permeate in the mind. That breathing mindfulness at the end is there for you if you need it. Where sometimes when you're doing loving kindness meditation, like I shared with you guys, as I was doing loving kindness meditation, when I had a lot of resentment towards my mom, that would kind of bubble up as I was in loving kindness meditation and saying, may mom be peaceful, may mom be safe, right? I'm transforming my mind here. And now all this resentment bubbles up and you have that there for you to cut that off and let that go. The breathing mindfulness meditation at the end of your loving kindness. But if you're noticing loving kindness is permeating the mind, you don't need to do that. And remember, this loving kindness meditation, it's not to change other people. It's to transform your mind. So you're not wishing that everybody will be well, right? You're not trying to ask for some being to come in and make other people be well. You're transforming your mind that you can have this goodwill, this genuine interest in seeing all beings be well, this active goodwill. Okay, so just a couple little pointers for you there. Slowing down your breath, if your breath is real shallow right now, slowing it down and kind of elongating it will really help to really slow the mind down. Do you guys have any questions either here at the temple or those of you guys joining us online about meditation? Yeah, we have some here. For those of you guys in YouTube, we can't live stream to Facebook right now. There's some impermanence there. So those of you guys in YouTube, in Zoom, if you have questions, you can put it in the comment section or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask any questions that you like. Yes, sir.
A question for me, probably more about physically related to meditation. It's been quite a long time since I have been meditating, but 20 years or so. So for me to be in this position for more than 10 minutes, I guess my mind is distracted more from the physical sense than anything else, and that leads to then thinking about other things, and it's hard to get back in breath. So is there any way that we should be physically sitting? Is there a benefit for having your legs crossed? Is there a benefit for not slouching or lying or standing or walking to make sure we reach that the deepest level of meditation? Because I'm noticing physically, my legs are getting sore, my knees are hurting, my back's sore, and that's distracting me. So would I be better off sitting in a more comfortable position at the risk of slouching or not being in an upright position? Is there etiquette involved? I hope that makes sense.
Yep, sure does. The short answer to your question is yes. You'd be better off having a position where the body is comfortable, not luxurious and not painful, right? There's no certificates given away for sitting in pain, right? And always keep in mind that this path to enlightenment is to train the mind. The Buddha already showed us that causing physical pain to the body doesn't lead to enlightenment. So you're always training your mind. So if at any point you feel physical discomfort, that's why you have the four positions, seated, lying, standing, and walking. So if you're sitting in this position and you feel physical discomfort, just lay down and do the lying position or stand up or do the walking position. You're not interested in having that pain, because how can you cultivate loving kindness if you've got this pain going through the mind, right? So you would like to switch positions. If you can adjust your position in the current position that you're in, that's great. If not, just change positions. If you're in any one particular position, it does help, like for a seated position, to have your body upright, because when you're slouched, the mind has a tendency to be dull and lethargic. It's hard to breathe in through the lungs. So if you're in in the seated position, sitting up is really helpful. But whether you choose to sit in a chair or you sit on the floor or you sit with many cushions under your rear, in that way it lessens the angle at your cross legs, or they even have meditation benches. I don't know if you've seen those before. They have this little bench that goes on the floor that you kind of tuck your legs behind you. These are oftentimes very comfortable for people. So there's lots of different devices. There's these great meditation cushions that we used to get in America. They're like kind of like a half moon or a crescent shape, and they were like a wedge shape. They were like sloped. It was really wonderful because it got the rear up in the air and then it sloped down to allow the legs to kind of slope down. These are kind of flat, but you can kind of replicate that by putting a lot of mats under your rear and kind of sloping the legs down or moving your legs off the mat. So if at any time you're noticing discomfort, switch positions. Just keep in mind that you're always training the mind, not the body. And then with all that said, if you would like to learn how to sit on the floor, you can do that by doing things like reading on the floor, watching TV on the floor, and then you throttle it, right? Like say you're sitting on the floor watching TV and now you feel a little bit of pain, you can sit up on the couch. Or one of the things that I used to do when I was training my body to sit on the floor is I would watch TV on the floor and then the commercial breaks, I would sit on the sofa. And then I would move back to the floor and do this. But you don't have to sit on the floor to get to enlightenment. You could totally sit in a chair, on a bench, on a sofa. You would just like to ensure the body's not luxurious and it's not painful, but it's in the middle where it's comfortable. And you find whatever pose works best for that because you're training the mind, not the body.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you. And would you say that there is a benefit, though, like you mentioned about the breathing, where when your body is upright, and you relax your limbs, as you let us know at the start of the meditation, there is a benefit for your mind to be sitting upright because you're taking deeper breaths?
It helps if you're going to be in the seated position to sit upright. But if you're laying flat, you can still fill up your lungs. Or if you're standing, you can still fill up your lungs. So it's not that seated position is better than lying or anything like that. It's just what do you need at that given time? There's times where, you know, I may have a slight little back pain and I might lie on the floor. Or there were times in the past where my mind was overactive and I couldn't sit, I couldn't lay, and I couldn't stand. All I could do was walking because I had too much energy in the mind. There were other times where I needed to stand. So it's important to develop all four positions. So depending on what's going on with this body, you can interchange those positions. There was one time where I got in a motorbike accident. I couldn't sit like this. I was laying in a hospital bed with a IV, but I could still meditate because I knew lying position is still the same thing that you're doing with the mind. So because this body is impermanent, that's why the Buddha gave four positions, because you're going to need these and employ these at different times. And it's best to get versed in these positions before you actually need them. So I knew lying position and I had practiced it before I actually needed it. So when it was time to use it, boom, it's right there in my tool belt. I had it in my tool belt. So while this may be a go-to position, either sitting on the floor or sitting in a chair, as you get comfortable with that, you would like to start dabbling with lying position, dabbling with standing, dabbling with walking position. Because one of the things that the mind's going to do, because it craves permanence, is it's going to crave to be in one particular position all the time. And you tried to show it, no, I'm not going to let you do that. So there were some times where even though I could do seated meditation, I intentionally did lying, standing, or walking just to show the mind, you're not going to get what you want all the time. And that's how you eliminate any craving to a body position, because your mind can crave. It's a master at craving. I think you were here when I was talking about my underwear, right? It was craving a particular fabric of underwear. The mind was doing that, right? Like, how silly is that, right? But man, I discovered that. And when you see those things, you would like to introduce some impermanence. So it can even crave a certain meditation position. It's just a master at craving. Yeah. So interchange it, introduce some impermanence. That'll really help you. But getting established, you know, for 4 to 6 or 8 weeks is really helpful, and then start introducing some impermanence. Even moving your mind around, going to different parks or temples, or if you typically meditate in your bedroom, go to the living room, go to the balcony, have different sights, different sounds, different smells, different places. This will really help you. Anything else you guys would like to discuss regarding meditation? Yeah, feel free. Get the microphones, pass those around. You have one over here.
It is helpful to meditate a loving kindness meditation when someone is sick, or you maybe are sick, like may I be well and healthy, or this body.
This meditation is to eliminate any anger that you have, any ill will, any frustration, agitation, or annoyance. So you're not willing something in. So you're not like praying. So it's not like mom is sick and now I'm going to do loving kindness meditation. I'm going to help her get well. What this is that if you're noticing you have resentment towards your mom or anger or frustration or agitation, or say you have a coworker that in a meeting, they said something and you got angry and you know that your anger is from you. It's not from them. It's your craving, desire, attachment. So you should put them into your loving kindness meditation. So I'm doing these general statements just because I'm guiding all of you. But if I was doing this for myself, I would say, you know, may Bob be peaceful. May Barbara be peaceful. Naming actual people that the mind might have anger, hatred, and ill will towards. When I was in business, one time the landlord of the business where I was renting came in and threatened to kill me right up in my face in front of my customers and my employees. He showed up in my loving kindness meditation for a little while. I had a little bit of frustration, right? There was a time where I was on my way to work and somebody cut me off in traffic. And okay, I used loving kindness meditation for a couple of days just to make sure that I didn't hold on to any anger or hatred. So it's not about wishing something to happen. It's about transforming your mind to ensure that that ill will is uprooted out of the mind. And you can do this for people that you currently have anger, hatred, ill will, frustration that are currently in your life. But also, like when that person cut me off in traffic, I wasn't interested in any anger setting in. So for a couple of days, I did loving kindness meditation. I don't even know who it was. I don't know if it was a guy or girl, what their name was. May that person who cut me off today be peaceful. Right. And then what you start noticing is when you do this in meditation, you can start using this in daily life. Like I would notice that as I was driving and someone would cut me off, may you be peaceful. May you be well. Right. You just right away, boom, you go to loving kindness because you're creating this new pathway in the mind because you're used to going down this pathway of anger and hatred. And now you would like to create this new pathway for you. So it's to transform your mind. It's not to create any kind of beneficial results for anybody. But if you're feeling anger towards mom for being sick, okay, sure, you know, use it, but it's not going to help mom be well. What's going to help mom be well is wise decisions with medical staff and doctors and nurses and people that can help her and wise decision-making. That's the karma. Oh, yes, sir.
My question, not about this meditation, you mentioned before in France watching TV, and I just catch my mind a few times ago that when I watch on TV and see internet news, my mind is feeling not good. And when I stop it, it's better to meditate. Mine became more peaceful and better to live. So what advice can be from you experience, sure, about this? If it's stopping sometimes better for our mind, for our style of life, and I don't know, what do you think?
Okay. So what's causing this anger to arise when you're watching the news is that you have a craving, desire, attachment, wanting the world to be a certain way, longing, yearning, wanting the world to be a certain way. When it's that way, you feel happy. But when it's not that way, you feel sad or frustrated or angry or agitated. So since you know you have this craving for the world to be a certain way, this is what we're identifying here, is what you do to eliminate a craving is you first distance yourself from the object. So if I was you, I would go a good long while without watching the news, 6 months, a year without watching the news. All the while you're training your mind through breathing mindfulness meditation, that first one that we were doing, and practicing generosity, which is training the mind to let go. And then after you've trained your mind for a while, you haven't been watching the news, don't worry, you'll hear about what's going on in the world. People will tell you, because I went a really long time without watching the news because I had the same thing. People will tell you what's going on. Don't worry, you won't be ignorant to what's going on in the world. But you go away from the news, you practice breathing mindfulness meditation and generosity. And then if you would like to start watching the news again, you bring it in slowly. You maybe watch it for a few minutes and you observe the mind and you notice the mind. Is there any frustration coming up? If there's any frustration, then you redirect the mind. You take it in the opposite direction. Maybe you go for a walk, you go for a bike ride, you go do something else. This is cutting off and letting go of any arising discontentedness. And you just slowly kind of bring it back into your life. And if you notice that frustration and anger and all these things are starting to arise again, then go a week or two or three or four without watching it again. And then now slowly bring it in again. So you're going to need breathing mindfulness, meditation, and generosity. That's what eliminates craving, desire, attachment. That needs to be consistent and ongoing. And then you need to distance yourself from what it's craving and desiring and attached to so that it gives the mind time to internally cut it off and let it go. And then something like the news, you can bring it back in because there's no harm in watching the news. It's just that you have a craving there, so you can't watch it without being frustrated right now. So once you eliminate the craving, then you can just slowly bring the news back in and you can maintain your contentedness.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions online. No more questions here. Okay, so let's go into tonight's topic, which is learning about personal existence view. This is where I'm going to teach you about this fetter, this taint, this pollution of mind, how to get the self out of the way. This is the very first fetter that needs to be eliminated in order to just get to the first stage of enlightenment. You're going to need to eliminate the first, second, and third fetter. Between this class and the next two tomorrow, I'm going to teach you about personal existence view, doubt, and wrong behavior and observances. I'm going to explain to you what it is, the symptoms that you'll experience because of it so that you can see that you have this. Then I'm going to explain to you how to eliminate it and then how to know that you've actually eliminated it. Because once you start experiencing those jhanas that we talked about last night, this is where you start pivoting your practice towards eliminating these. But you can still be doing some of this work even now if you're aware of this. So this is where you would normally need to start looking at these very closely, start understanding them so you can start eliminating them. If you haven't put the Eightfold Path in practice yet and you're just getting started with that, that might be where you be for a while, that maybe you need several months or maybe even a year or so to get that underway. But then at some point, you're going to need to start looking at these fetters and start addressing these. So I'll teach it to you, but you may or may not be at a point in your practice right now where you're ready to deeply start eliminating the self. But just understand that this is something you'll need to learn, and you'll probably need to learn it more than one time. It's not something that you learn just one time and you implement it and boom, it's gone out of the mind. This can often take students, I've seen 6 months to a year just to understand it, and then additional time to actually practice it. So they're gradually learning, gradually reflecting on it, gradually practicing. It can often take multiple conversations to be able to understand this. But we'll get started with that today for some of you. And then others of you, you might have already been studying this with me, and this is just kind of an opportunity for you to get deeper into it. Okay, so first, what is personal existence view? This is where the mind falsely believes, has the mistaken understanding, the misperception, the misunderstanding, the confusion that this body and or this mind is you and who you are. There's a certain self-image and there's a certain self-identity that the mind is clinging to. The mind wants to be perceived in the world a certain way, and it thinks that this body is you, this self-image, or a certain self-identity, like your culture, your ethnicity, your nationality, your sexual orientation, your job. The mind clings to these things, thinking that this is who you are, your self-identity. So this is the pollution, that the mind is clinging to the body and to the mind, or to the self-image and the self-identity, because it has this confusion, this misunderstanding. And you can see that there is no self through things that I shared with you guys when we talked about the universal truth of non-self. We talked about, you know, if you had your arm amputated, are you less of a person? And usually people say, no, I'm not less of a person. So intellectually, you know, to a certain level that this body isn't you. Because if I asked you, if you had your arm amputated, are you less of a person? If this body is you, you would say, yes, I'm less of a person. But I've never had anybody say that yet. Everybody says if their arm was amputated, I'm not less of a person. So intellectually, the mind can understand that this body isn't you. But because of its confusion, because of its misunderstanding, because of its misperception, it will think that this body is you. Or there can be this way to independently verify it, is that you can think about how you were a child, your personality, your character, when you were a teenager, when you were early adulthood, and then now. Think about your character and your personality, and how have you viewed yourself exactly the same way all the way through these stages of your life, or have you viewed yourself differently each time? Well, most people say, yeah, I view myself differently. Like I don't have the same character or personality when I was a child, when I was a teenager, early adulthood, and now. because you can see that this has been constantly changing. So what the mind's doing when it has personal existence view is it's clinging to this body, it's clinging to the mind and the self-identity, wanting it to be permanent. And then when it starts experiencing all this change, it struggles and has difficulties. So this is the pollution. This is the taint. This is what personal existence view is. Now I'm going to explain to you the symptoms that you're going to experience as a result of this. There's going to be discontentedness related to the self-image and self-identity. You can experience embarrassment, whereas if you spill something on your clothing, you can feel embarrassed because you're not being perceived in the world the way you want to be perceived. Or say somebody says something about this body, you can feel embarrassed. You can feel shy if you've ever had stage fright or you've ever felt shyness in any particular situation, like shyness in talking to somebody. This is coming from personal existence view, where you want to be perceived in the world a certain way, and you're not quite sure if you're going to be perceived that way or not. So you're hesitant, you're shy, you're maybe scared or fearful to interact with other people. You can lack confidence when you're in public settings, whether you're in a business or whether you're here, you know, picking up the microphone and actually talking in a public setting or interacting with people. You can lack confidence. You can feel diminished and maybe demoralized in certain situations. You can have social anxiety when you go to a large group. You can feel anxiety and fear from being around others because you're worried about how you might be perceived amongst others. And this is all coming from the personal existence view, clinging to this body and or this self-identity, wanting to be perceived a certain way. You can experience anger, frustration, irritation, agitation, and annoyance based on the self-image or self-identity. So if somebody says, "Wow, you look so handsome in those clothes. It really brings out the colors of your eyes." Or, "Wow, your hair looks really beautiful. You look really handsome today." You might get pleasant feelings based on the condition that somebody's complimenting you about your physical appearance. But then, because of impermanence, it's only a matter of time before somebody says something degrading or disparaging about your physical appearance. And now you'll experience the anger, the frustration, the agitation, the annoyance. And not only is this happening with the self-image, but with the self-identity. If you're sitting at a restaurant and two tables over, maybe somebody's disparaging the country where you come from. If you have the self-identity of "I am American," or "I am Mexican," or "I am Brazilian," or "I'm a Brit," or "I'm Italian," "I'm Irish." I'm not sure where all of you guys are from, but I know some of you guys, "I'm an Aussie." And now two tables over, they're degrading Aussies, right? You can feel diminished. You can feel angry. You can feel frustrated because now they're talking about me, right? But you need to be able to see that this is the problem, that you can't control other people and what other people say. As long as your mind's clinging to the body or the mind thinking that this is who you are, you're going to potentially experience any of these discontent feelings in others based on the self-image and self-identity. Then you can experience where the mind will want to protect your reputation or defend your self-image or self-identity. When you're in a certain social situation and somebody says something and you don't like what they say, maybe you need to feel like you defend it either verbally or with your bodily actions. People have been in fights. This fetter is part of the ego. It's not the entire ego. The word ego didn't exist during the lifetime of the Buddha, but this is part of the ego. There's two fetters that make up what we refer to as the ego. So this is part of the ego. So if you're in an environment where somebody has said something about your self-image or your self-identity, you might be ready to go to blows. Someone's talking about your nationality or your sexual orientation or your culture, your ethnicity or your job. If you've taken on this identity of "I am a police officer," and now you hear people talking about police officers in a negative way, you might be ready to fight because you think this is who you are. So the mind might want to protect the reputation or defend based on this self-image or self-identity. We have this phrase in Asia about losing face, that when you're in public, if somebody says something degrading or disparaging, you've lost face. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. And now someone might feel like they need to protect their face. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about losing your face or protecting your face, is that somebody's triggered your personal existence view. It's your mind that has this personal existence view, but somebody might say something that triggers that to arise, and now you experience discontentedness in the mind where you're either embarrassed or you're angry or frustrated. And now when that comes into the mind, now you might have unskillful speech or actions. This is where you take it to the nth degree. Maybe you end up in jail for beating this person up, for talking about people from your country. right? So the Buddha is teaching you how to get rid of this so you don't make unskillful actions or verbal conduct that's going to create unwholesome results for you. Because when you have these pollutions and you're experiencing this discontentedness rising up, you might take unskillful actions either through speech or through your actions. And now it's going to produce an unwise decision that creates unwholesome results in your life. You might worry or overthink one's appearance of the body or attempting to uphold the self-image to be perceived by others in a certain way. I remember when I was a teenager, I would stand in front of the mirror and just comb my hair before school, like put on the mousse, put on the gel, like it had to be exactly right. I could stay there for sometimes 15, 20 minutes and had to look exactly right before I went out. Or you might put on clothes, certain clothes, and you look in the mirror, you don't look the way you want to look, and then you change to another clothes and you look in the mirror again, right? This is the personal existence view, being worried about how you're perceived in the world. So you might be looking in the mirror based on this self-image and only feel comfortable going out into the world if you look a certain way. The mind's uncomfortable if you have a bad hair day, right? For us men, we don't usually have that too much, but women, we tend to have bad hair days, right? I don't feel comfortable going out maybe with a bad hair day. This is something that can happen as a symptom. Or you might see that you're changing clothes readily looking in the mirror. Men can have this too. I remember growing up that I was like this. Okay, here's some more. Wanting others to acknowledge your accomplishments or seeking acknowledgement of your accomplishments, like certain credentials that you have or certain training that you have. You might be looking for others to acknowledge that and say like, wow, that's really amazing that you've done that. Or wow, look at you. Aren't you so great? You might be posting on Facebook. Wow, look at me. I completed this class. Look how great I am. Wanting people to acknowledge things that you've done. This is coming from the personal existence view. You might notice that you're scared or frightened or jumpy when there's sudden sounds. If you're sitting somewhere and you hear a sudden wha-wham, you can jump. You can become frightful because the mind is trying to protect the self. The mind is confused. It thinks that there's a self here and it cannot be comfortable with that impermanence, and it can really jump and get frightened because of this personal existence view. You can take things very personally. When people say things, take it very personally rather than just brushing it off. It would be wonderful if you were around people that were always complimentary and never said anything negative or degrading about you. But remember, you live in a world where the vast majority of beings are unenlightened. They're not practicing right intention, right speech, and right action. They're not practicing a moral conduct that you're learning, right? When we go out into the public on these excursions, I don't hear anybody degrading anybody. You guys are all very loving and kind and warm and gentle with each other. But that's not the way the rest of the world is necessarily, right? So when you go out there in the world, someone might say something degrading or disparaging, and you can't control what they say. But you can control your own mind if you eliminate your personal existence view. So if somebody says something degrading or disparaging about the self-image or the self-identity, if you have a hard time just brushing it off and no big deal, then this is the mind having personal existence view. So these are some of the symptoms that you can experience. Is there anything that you guys would like to ask me about in terms of certain symptoms that you're experiencing and you're curious whether this is your personal existence view? I'd like to talk about those before I share with you how to eliminate this from the mind. Is there anything you guys would like to ask about, certain things you're experiencing and you're curious if it's from personal existence view or not? Okay, I don't see anything. All right. So now that you potentially are seeing that your mind has this personal existence view through the various symptoms that I mentioned, now I'm going to explain to you how to eliminate it. There's a long list of things here, and these are ways to gradually wear away this personal existence view. It's not that you do one thing and within one day it's gone, or even one week or one month and it's gone. Your personal existence view is going to get triggered. Even from this point forward, learning about personal existence view, you're not going to be able to just implement these things. And that's actually part of the way that you eliminate personal existence view. Is what I'm going to share with you here is proactive things that you can be doing to wear away your personal existence view. But you're also going to notice, even in doing these proactive things, occasionally your personal existence view is going to get triggered and you're going to notice discontentedness arising. Whenever you notice discontentedness arising for any reason whatsoever, you just cut it off and let it go. It should just be a response that your mind gets so used to. Discontentedness, boom, cut it off. And then later you might reflect, was that personal existence view? Was that central desire? You know, what was that? What fetter was that? Was that ill will? What was that? But in the moment, when you're noticing the discontentness arise, cut it off and let it go. These things that I'm going to share with you as proactive trainings are going to help you so that your mind is less likely to have its personal existence view triggered. But it's going to be triggered until it completely is eliminated from the mind. So by implementing these, you'll gradually wear it away. But you're not going to know each day how much of this fetter you wear away. The Buddha talks about this related to the various fetters. He talks about it in terms of like a digging tool. If you had a digging tool with a wooden handle and you were digging with this tool every day, there's wood that's wearing away from this handle every day, but you don't know how much of the wood is wearing away from the handle. But when the handle is completely exhausted and you need to replace the handle, you'll know that when it's completely done and over with and you need to replace the handle. But each day you are wearing wood away from the handle, but you don't know how much. The same thing is true when you're implementing these proactive ways to train your mind to eliminate the fetters. You're wearing it away each day, but you just don't know how much. You won't know until it's completely gone. And the reason why is because it'll be 6 months, a year, 2 years. You'll hear different people say things about your nationality, about your culture, about your ethnicity, about your job, about your sexual orientation, and it won't bother you. Where in the past, it would have arisen certain frustration or agitation or annoyance. So here, I'm going to share these proactive things with you, but just understand it's not like you can do it and then just 1 week it's gone, or even 1 month. It oftentimes takes a significant period of time to gradually wear this away. And this is where I share, you may not be at the point right now to implement these things. You may be at the point in your practice where you're just looking to get your arms around the Eightfold Path and developing your meditation practice and the five precepts. And that's a good place to be, you know, build up your foundation. But at some point, you're going to start needing to pivot and now start doing some of these things, because you'll have the Eightfold Path well underway. You won't be working so hard to bring that into practice anymore. So now you have extra time, you can start doing these things. The first one is receive guidance on how to use the meditation to realize non-self, which is in chapter 11 of volume 1. We're actually going to do this tomorrow. I'm going to teach it to you tomorrow morning as our morning meditation, and then we're going to do it in the evening as well, so you get a chance to learn it and actually do it. But it's documented in volume 1, chapter 11. This meditation will help you to eliminate clinging to this body and clinging to this mind, thinking that this is who you are. You might need to change your language and start disassociating with these words of my and I and me and things like this. What the mind does when it has personal existence view is it's my phone, my computer, my car, my kids, my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my husband, my wife. There's all this my job, my money, my clothes. So you can start to distance yourself from this and start to disassociate with these things as mine, realizing that there is no me here. There is no I here. And now you change your language. Instead of, you know, my clothes, it's the clothes. Instead of my phone, can you hand me the phone? Or instead of my car, the car. Right? Instead of I'm going to my house, I'm going to the house. So you gradually start changing your language and start disassociating with this mine. You might be able to do this in about 90% of the cases or 95% of the cases. The reason why you need to do this is because the English language is unfitting to truly describe what's going on here. We tend to use these words, but it's not really structured in such a way that helps you to really get to the point where you can eliminate this personal existence view. So in the Thai language, when you refer to yourself, you don't say that I am hungry. You say David is hungry. You use the third person, because their language has been around for the amount of time that Buddhism has been here. Buddhism has been here for 800 to 1200 years. This language that they use has been structured around Buddhism and what they understand about Buddhism. So they tend to talk in the third person. This is also why it's very easy for Thai people to change their name. They can go down to the government office and within about 30 minutes, boom, you can change your name. Just sign a couple of documents, boom, you can change your name. Because that's one of the things that the mind holds on to, right? Like, I am David, right? Or I am Andy, or I am Alan, right? Or I am Rebecca. And then when you hear somebody refer to your name in a different way, you might get frustrated if you're holding on to that name or that label. So Thai people will oftentimes change their name to disassociate with this name as being who they are, right? And when they're born, they get an official name on their birth certificate, but then they get a nickname that they tend to go by. And they might change that nickname many, many times. So rather than think about I am hungry, or I have a headache, or I am thirsty, you might think about the body is hungry. The body is thirsty. The head hurts, right? This is ways that you can refer to it. Even if you don't say it that way to other people, if you think that way, it'll help you to disassociate with this personal existence view. But like I said, you can do this in about 90, 95% of the time. When I introduce my son to somebody, I don't say, you know, this is the being that I contributed sperm to 12 years ago, right? That's not how I introduce him. People be like, well, who is he talking about? This guy is weird. I say, this is my son, Bailan, right? Because it's just easier to refer to him that way. So you might notice 90, 95% of the time, you can think this way, you can speak this way. Even though I introduce him as my son, my mind knows he's not mine. He doesn't belong to me. He is his own being, making his own decisions. I'm here to guide him. I'm here to provide him suggestions and advice, but he needs to make his own decisions. And he's his own being. So even though I might introduce him as my son, the mind understands he's not mine. That's why you hear me say the mind. You don't hear me say my mind. I typically will say the mind or the body, right? So you can disassociate with this and it'll help you to distance yourself from personal existence view. You need to develop the perception of impermanence deeply in the mind. If you haven't done this already, you're going to need to go around, walk down the sidewalk, see the crack in the sidewalk. Ah, that's impermanence. Ah, the fence is one color and now it's fading. That's impermanence. Oh, we set off the other day to go to the market and then we changed our mind and we went to another market. That's impermanence. Did one thing and then something else happened, right? There's all this impermanence around you. You need to deeply see impermanence everywhere around you. Because what the mind's doing with personal existence view is it's wanting this body to be permanent and it's wanting this mind to be permanent. It's clinging to the self-image and the self-identity. So if you can notice that everything around you is impermanent, more and more deeply soaking that into the mind, then you have less and less of a tendency to cling to this body or this mind is who you are. Some other things you can do is wear simple clothing and make your appearance look simple. What I suggest with this is some people like to go to just very simple clothing. Like you see me wearing all white, I wear the same clothes every day. The monks wear the same robe every day, essentially. If you're not interested in wearing the same color clothing every day and you're not interested in redoing your wardrobe, you can actually accomplish the same thing that the monks do and that I do without even changing your wardrobe and changing anything about that and spending that money. What you can do is you can take your clothes and you can stack them up. This is shorts, this is shirts, or this is pants, this is shirts. And now you just pick off the top of the stack and you just wear whatever's on the top. Because what the mind's going to want to do is it's going to stand there in front of your clothes and say, who am I going to see today? How do I want to be perceived today? What do I want to look like today? And then you're going to rifle through your clothes and pick that shirt that you want to wear today or those clothes you want to wear today. But if you just stack them up and you don't give the mind the opportunity to select, you just pick off the top, this is helping you to eliminate personal existence view. Now, of course, 90, 95% of the time you might be able to do this. But if you're going to immigration, you might need to look a certain way because those people might be expecting you to look a certain way. They may or may not be enlightened. You're going for a job interview. You might need to wear something other than your ripped off shorts that are on the top of the pile, right? But that's only a small percentage of the time. All the other times you can be wearing whatever's on the top of the stack. Or if you work in a formal environment and then on the weekends, you wear casual clothes, you can pick off the top of one pile that has formal clothes and just wear whatever's on the top of that pile. And then on the weekends, pick off the casual pile. You can do it this way too. Or if you're hanging clothes up, you can hang your formal clothes and just pick the front. And then when you are doing your casual stuff, pick off the casual thing. But remember, your mind's going to be sitting there trying to go to the middle of the stack. Right? Because I noticed this even with the white clothes, that when I first started doing this, there were certain white shirts that fit me a little bit better. And I was looking to the middle of the stack to find one of those shirts that fit me just a little bit better. So if my mind was doing that with the white clothes, I'm sure your mind's going to do that with your clothes. So resist that. cut that off. Don't let the mind grab from the middle of the stack. Just pick off the top. This is the way to train the mind to not associate with the self-image. You don't give it a chance to pick. You just pick off the top. Here you can refrain from wearing jewelry or body decorations like makeup or bodily scents or perfumes or colognes. If you're doing those things now, you know, all of this stuff, you're not a bad person, right? If your mind's doing these things, there's nothing harmful in wearing jewelry. But if you would like to train your mind to not go out in the world and be perceived a certain way, you can stop wearing your jewelry sometimes. So maybe one day you wear your jewelry, one day you don't. One day you wear it, maybe 2 days you don't. One day you wear it, 3 or 4 or 5 days you don't wear it. Some people like to just go to no jewelry whatsoever and for an extended period of time. You can do that, but sometimes you need to ease the mind into that. This is where I was talking about if you wear like the same bracelets or the same watch every day, if you can't even fathom going out of the house without wearing that and you would kind of feel naked or strange going out without your earrings or without your makeup or without your cologne or something like that, you're going to need to start training the mind to go out into the world without these things. And this will help your mind to be able to see, hey, I can be peaceful and joyful when I wear those earrings, but I can be peaceful and joyful when I don't wear earrings too. I can be peaceful and joyful when I wear makeup, and I can be peaceful and joyful when I don't wear makeup too. So if you go out into the world without these kinds of things, you can train your mind to be comfortable, and this will help you to eliminate personal existence view. So there's all these things that I share here that will help you to be able to eliminate the mind's holding on to the self-image or self-identity. Another thing is that you can remove your head hair or your facial hair. These aren't a list that everybody has to do every single one. You can still get to enlightenment without shaving off your hair. Oftentimes, women find it more challenging to shave off their head hair, where men might find it more challenging to shave off their facial hair. If just the thought of shaving off your hair kind of bothers you, this is a good justification to do it, right? Because your mind might be uncomfortable just talking about shaving off your facial hair or shaving off your head hair. I'm not telling you you have to do it. I'm not telling you you're required to do it. You can surely get to enlightenment without doing that. But one of the ways to help you eliminate this personal existence view and clinging to this self-image and self-identity is go out into the world with hair sometimes, and then sometimes cut off your hair and go out into the world that way and train the mind to be peaceful and content and joyful. And same thing with your head hair. Now, sometimes if you're in a relationship, you might have a partner that's attached to your facial hair or that's attached to your head hair. And you might actually not only be helping you, you might be helping your partner to eliminate their attachment to your facial hair or to your head hair. So this can not only help you, but it can help your partner as well. You might find this kind of situation. But again, you can get to enlightenment without shaving off your hair. There's people that do that, but this is a way to really accelerate your elimination of personal existence view. This is like one of the very best things that you can do to really accelerate eliminating personal existence view. We know that the Buddha cut off his hair in order to basically, like, I'm not going back to the royal kingdom. I'm not going back to be a prince or a king, because they grew really long hair during his lifetime to show that you're part of the royal family. But the other thing that it accomplished is it accomplished helping to eliminate this personal existence view. And that's why monks and people who might be teaching or something, that's why we shave our hair, because we're just not interested in trying to cling to this body as who we are. It just doesn't matter how this body looks, because we know that this body isn't me. It's not me. It doesn't belong to me. It's not who I am. So if you would like to do this at any point, you surely can. That's an option for you. You can eliminate your interest to project personal image through cutting off and letting go of any feelings or interest in the mind to mentally project or protect the self-image or self-identity. So this is like, say you're going out with friends and you're sitting at a table and we're all talking, and then somebody says something about your self-image, and right away you want to come over the top and you want to be like, oh, the reason why I have this pimple is because of this and because of that and because of this. Like right away the mind's trying to protect yourself in front of other people. Cut that off. Somebody comments about your pimples, just smile, right? No need to come over the top and protect your image in front of other people. Or like the example I was giving you, that if you're noticing that you're picking out your clothes and your mind's wanting to go through and rifle through your clothes and find a particular shirt or particular pants or particular earrings, and you're noticing that your mind's doing this, you're going to need to cut that off and restrain the mind and pull it back. So this is in the moment, wherever you see your mind longing and yearning, wanting to project a certain self-image or self-identity, you restrain the mind and you pull it back. That's what this one's referring to. And any time that you see discontentedness arising associated with personal existence view, so that you are at that table and then somebody does comment about the physical appearance and you notice frustration arising, cut it off, let it go. And if you need to redirect the mind by excusing yourself and going to the bathroom, get up and go to the bathroom. Your goal in this life isn't to teach that person sitting at the table that they were unwise for saying that about you, right? Because there's no you here. What the unenlightened mind will do is it'll sit there and be like, you know, Barbara, that was really rude what you said. You shouldn't have said that. You know, that can really hurt somebody's feelings, right? Well, yeah, that was unwise for Barbara to say that. But what's hurting your feelings is the personal existence view, the craving. So you're not going to fix Barbara. And even if you do fix Barbara, you've got a million other Barbaras to fix or a million other Bobs to fix, right? You can't go around the world and train other people to do things your way. All you can do is train your mind. So if you're in a social situation where somebody says something that triggers your personal existence view, just cut that off and let it go. And if you need to redirect the mind by going to the bathroom, by stepping outside the restaurant and walking around a little bit or whatever it is you need to do, go do that. Redirect the mind. Come back to the table 5-10 minutes later with a calm mind that you've let this go now. And now you don't need to say anything. You don't need to do anything. You just step away. And that was probably good for Barbara to see too, right? That she said something degrading and disparaging and you just politely got up, said, you know, I'm going to go outside for a fresh air. I'll see you guys in a little bit, right? And that's probably good for Barbara to see too, that when she's degrading and disparaging, that people aren't interested in being around her. That's her karma, right? So it's going to help you to clear your mind and cut off and let go of any personal existence view, but it can potentially help her too, to see that it's unwise to do that. But you're not going to fix Barbara. You're not going to fix Bob. That's not your goal. Your goal is to fix your own mind so that now, next time somebody says something like that, you can reside peaceful and joyful, maybe just smile, and it doesn't affect you. Okay? So anytime you observe any discontentedness arising related to this self that's in the mind, it's not a true self. It's not truly there. It's just that the mind is clinging to the concept of a self. There is no self. That's the universal truth of non-self. There is no self, right? But the mind's going to be confused and think that there is a self. So the way you get the self out of the way and realize that there is no self and realize non-self is anytime you see discontentedness arising related to that personal existence view, you cut it off and let it go. And then as you need to, you can consult with the teacher to receive guidance on this. Sometimes students need 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different conversations about personal existence view to understand it and then get help with implementing this. Like I shared with you guys earlier, there's a student who's been learning with me for probably like a year, 1.5, 2 years. And he scheduled an appointment with me recently. And he said, hey, David, I'm having this issue. And he shared a couple of different things related to tipping, where he considered himself, I am a good tipper. And then when he was in social situations where he doesn't tip, he felt uncomfortable. He felt odd. He felt strange that he wasn't tipping. And this was because of his personal existence view. And then there was also a situation where he had his boss share something with him and says, you know, your personality doesn't really fit into this company. You're not going to be able to advance in this company based on your personality. And then he really struggled with that a little bit too. This was his personal existence view. So wherever you see challenges, you can always reach out to me about anything, but you might need to talk about this personal existence view. You might need to brainstorm this. This student who was talking to me, he didn't even know that it was his personal existence view that was being triggered. He was just sharing with me the situations that he was experiencing, and then I needed to help him and identify and show him that, hey, this is your personal existence view. So your personal existence view is going to need to be triggered in order for you to let it go. You're going to need to be able to see it. It's like a wild bush that you're going to need to cut it back and cut it back and cut it back in order to fully uproot it. So you can't learn something like this and not go out into the world and you'll never experience discontentedness related to personal existence view. It's going to get triggered at some point or another. So when it does, you cut it off and let it go and you maintain this work, this proactive work that I've been talking about. And if you need to reach out to get help, you can reach out and get help. Any questions on any of this training in order to get the self out of the way and eliminate personal existence view? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I think that the one triggers this mind is the one with the clothing, because in Mexico, being a woman, you have to choose your clothes in order to, if you're going out at night, if you're going to be alone, if you're going to be in a certain place. I mean, it could be like potentially be more dangerous depending on the clothes, or put in a certain danger. So that's why I think it's more difficult for me to think about not choosing my clothes, because here I don't think that it doesn't matter, but if I go somewhere because it's heat and I have shorts, but I'm going to be at night, it's going to be more dangerous for me. Mm-hmm. It's not only a personal existing view, but a matter of, I don't know, be less in danger, I think.
Yeah, so what you do is you customize this for your unique experience, right? So I just shared with you the general teaching, but now hearing what you share with me, what I would advise you to do is have your clothes for daytime and have your clothes for nighttime. Now, all these clothes are safe for nighttime to go out in Mexico. Now you pick off of that pile because you know all these clothes are safe. You're still not giving the mind an opportunity to pick. It's just picking off the top, but you've pre-sorted them that you know that these are safe, because that's a wise thing for you to do, to go out with certain clothing. But you might have 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 different clothes and you're just picking off the top. And now the mind's still not getting a choice, but you've made your wise choice about these clothes are safe to go outside. That's a wise choice. Here, you're trying to get rid of the personal existence view by just selecting off the top.
I guess this is a perfect example of impermanence. but unfortunately, we live in a society where people do judge you based on how you look, what you're wearing, your facial hair, and unfortunately, still your color of your skin, where you're from. An example of this is I've applied for a job and I have an interview on Monday. And when I drop my resume off, it has to have a photo of me on it so they can see that I am a, you know, Caucasian, Western-looking human man, which is sad, but impermanence, and not everyone is on the stage to enlightenment. So as an example, for me to turn up for this job interview, I style my hair. I've got gel in it, like you were talking about, to make sure I look professional. I'm wearing my best clothes, my polished shoes. I don't want to shave the beard because the photo in the resume has a beard in it. How do you live in a society where, whilst we might be, you know, looking at this personal existence view and how we want to shed it, however, society in certain ways expects us to look a certain way?
Yeah. So this is where I was sharing how, you know, like 90-95% of the time, you might be able to do some of these things. But then an occasion where if you need to go to immigration or a job interview or something like that, you're going to need to look a certain way because other people are judging this being. But then as you understand these proactive ways to train the mind, maybe you get that job and maybe you're secure in that job for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 months. And now you know, like, hey, I can shave this facial hair and nobody will bat an eye. And this is something you're doing for yourself. So that's why, like, we should never be measuring and comparing each other about who does what or how they do things, because everybody's on their own journey to enlightenment. It's your own independent journey. And what might make sense for you right now might not make sense for somebody else. And what makes sense for somebody else might not make sense for you right now. And this is where you need to be on your own independent journey and plot your course. Here I'm sharing with you how to eliminate this personal existence view. If you're thinking about shaving your facial hair and right now is not that time, then that's fine, right? You don't need to run out and go do all these things right now. But this is how you would eliminate personal existence view. And you'll need to find the time and place for these things to occur. And shaving off your facial hair doesn't mean you'll never, ever have facial hair ever again in your life, right? You might decide that, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 months into this new job, you're comfortable shaving your facial hair and that's what you'd like to do. Or what some people like to do is they do it in small increments, because the mind oftentimes doesn't like that drastic impermanence. So you might shave like the sides and go to a goatee, and then maybe you shave the chin and now you just got a mustache, and now maybe you thin out the mustache, right? And you do this over a period of weeks to allow your mind to adjust to it. Other people like to jump in the deep end. It depends. When you go swimming, do you usually go in the shallow end and gradually make your way to the deep end? Okay, so you'd probably like this way. Other people like to just jump in the deep end and boom, shave it all off, right? So you gradually go in, right? And now when you gradually do this, now you'll feel more and more comfortable. It's allowing your mind to adjust and allows the other people around you to adjust too. And this might be the best way for you. So that's why everyone's on their own journey and you need to decide when's the appropriate time for you to do these kinds of things. And that's why I shared that the Eightfold Path has to be really well underway in order to for you to do something like this, because as the discontentedness is arising due to personal existence view, you need to be able to cut it off. And that's what you learn in the mental discipline section of the Eightfold Path with right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So by having that breathing mindfulness meditation and generosity well underway in that mental discipline section, and even the moral conduct too, because if somebody says something disparaging about you not having facial hair, you might feel like, hey, you want to talk bad to them. So by having the Eightfold Path as a foundational teaching underway, then as you've been doing that, it can make sense to start directing the mind to doing this. And when or if you ever get to this, it's your choice. No one's ever going to say anything to you otherwise. It's your choice to decide when to implement any of these.
Perfect. And how would you suggest to deal with the, you know, still on the journey, still having the build-up frustration that people do make judgment about the color of your skin or how you look or your facial hair or your clothes, or, you know, how do you deal with that discontentment that you might feel inside about why are you judging me about how I look? This is so unfair. This is wrong. And it's hard to stop your mind from going down that pathway.
Yeah. Anytime you see any discontentedness arising, cut it off and let it go. That's like right away you need to do that. That's the identifying. And then the thing that I said about the red light on the dashboard of the car, you're cutting that off, cutting that off, cutting that off. Then when you look inward, that second step, what am I craving here? I'm craving for the world to be a certain way. I want everybody to be loving and kind and non-judgmental. So I'm craving for the world to be a certain way, and it just isn't going to be that way. There's going to be some people who look at you as a friendly, loving guy, and they don't care about the color of your skin. There's going to be other people who judge you for that. And most likely, the people who are judging you for that, you're probably not interested in spending time around them anyway. Not that you have aversion, not that you're judging them and pushing them away, but you'll probably tend to associate with people more that are non-judgmental, and that's where you feel most comfortable. And that's the gamma, that people who are kind of walking towards the light tend to kind of congregate together. People who are walking towards the darkness, they tend to congregate together. This is, you know, the way the world is. So you'll probably gravitate towards people who are into more wholesome things. And the Buddha talks about this, is selecting friends who are into wholesome things, but you need to be able to do that with discernment, wise decision making, rather than judgment where you're looking down on somebody. So if some people are judging you, you'll probably just choose to move on and really not, you know, be at that company or be among those people. And then when you see other people judging others or judging you, any discontentedness that's arising, you cut that off and let it go and not crave the world to be a certain way, realizing that there's impermanence. Some people are going to be loving and kind and non-judgmental and other people aren't. And training your mind to understand that impermanence, you can let that craving go. And when you hear someone being judgmental, it doesn't affect your mind. But then you just choose who would you like to associate with. And it's probably going to be the non-judgmental people. Go for it.
So teacher, you mentioned yesterday that personal existence view is a mental object. Then what would be the mental states related to this mental object for us to be able to observe them and catch them when they happen?
That's what I was talking about back here with the symptoms. These are the symptoms that you're going to experience. So whenever you see any of these symptoms arising, that's when you'd like to cut off and cut off, whether it's the embarrassment, the shyness, the lack of confidence in public settings, social anxiety, anger. If you can catch these as a bodily sensation, that's what you'd like to do. Because like shyness, we talk about it as butterflies in the stomach, but what that really is it's a bodily sensation. It's queasiness in the stomach, letting you know that, hey, your mind's about to experience shyness. So if you can catch it as a bodily sensation and cut it off there, you save your mind of needing to experience this conditioned feeling. So that's why the Eightfold Path is so important to have underway first, before you really start focusing on this. Because as you're starting to shed the personal existence view, it can almost feel like you're walking off a cliff, because our mind has been clinging to this self-identity and this self-image for so long that we've been taught, like, I am Corey, right? Or I am Andy, or I am David, or I am Victoria. And now when you start shedding that and letting it go, it can feel like you're walking off a cliff, and it can feel pretty scary. This meditation that I'm going to teach you guys tomorrow, when people first start doing it, if they've been doing a lot of the other work and they're ready to eliminate personal existence view, they can get a lot of fear in the mind. So you'd like to cut this off and let it go. You'd like to have that eightfold path well underway, because that's what's going to help you to be able to do that whenever you see these symptoms arising.
Okay. Thank you very much for that talk, and particularly the stuff about the symptoms. Ooh. It explains a lot of my last 60 years, but, you know, live and learn, and never too late. So my question, though, is perhaps maybe on terminology, which I don't get hung up on terminology, but these days, if you got, you know, there's so much on YouTube and everything about personal growth and spiritual development and da-da-da, and 9 times out of 10, they talk about transcending the self or transcending the ego. Mm-hmm. So here in your talking, say if you take the example of getting dressed for work in the morning. So before, you know, the gel and what color shirt and what style pants, you know, there's a mind and a body doing that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then after a bit of work, we've got the 2 stacks of shorts and t-shirts, but there's still a mind and a body that has done that. Mm-hmm. So in both instances, there's a mind and a body. And it's just that from an initial stage of the mind and the body being untrained or undeveloped or whatever word you want to use, it's now we've made progress. So there's still a mind and a body there, but it's operating in a way more conducive to our, and who is our, more conducive to my, who is my, more conducive to this entity becoming more enlightened. So again, it's partly terminology, but it's partly like a worldview or a cosmology on it, because and I've been listening. I don't know why some song has jumped into my playlist recently, and he's got a line in it, and it's a very nice song. Da 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 da. He talks, and then he says, "I haven't transcended my ego. We became teammates," and somehow that resonates with me. That there is still an ego before and after. It's just that in with the work, the ego has become refined and consistent with a journey towards enlightenment, okay. rather than the ego being eliminated, mm-hmm. or the self being eliminated. I've transformed it. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense?
Yeah. So to get to enlightenment, somebody would need to completely dissolve and eradicate the ego. You can't get to enlightenment without dissolving and eradicating the ego. The ego has 2 components to it. It has this personal existence view that we've been talking about, but then there's another fetter, which is called conceit, which is arrogance and pride and boastfulness, judging other beings and putting yourself above or below them. As long as the mind is doing that, it's not yet enlightened. So if somebody still has ego, or they say that we're teammates, and that means that they're acknowledging that there's ego still there, they're not yet enlightened. Because if somebody goes around being conceitful and boastful and arrogant, people are going to reject that person, right? They're not going to appreciate that arrogance and pride, and they're going to push that person away. By the time you get to enlightenment, you'll be able to reside harmoniously with all beings. An enlightened being isn't going to be arrogant and boastful and prideful. What you're talking about here with the stacks of clothes, and there's still a body and a mind that's done that. The mind is what's making the decisions, and the body is just executing those decisions. So the mind is the boss and the body's the employee. So in a situation where you haven't done this and you're going to a certain event and you know certain people are going to be there, and you're rifling through your clothes to figure out that perfect set of clothes that you would like to wear, and then you pull that out and now you're going to wear that because you want to be perceived a certain way. In that instance, the personal existence view has arisen. If you're just stacking your clothes up and now a week later, 2 weeks later, there's just this random stack of clothing because you couldn't have known who you were going to see when and how and all those kinds of things. So now when the mind's going to this event, you know you're going to see certain people, and where the mind might want to pull from the middle of the stack, you're not allowing it to do that. You're just going to pull off the top and not give the mind the opportunity to make the choice based on personal existence view. You've made the choice to make these stacks, but the stacks are random. It's not in consideration of your personal existence view. When you're rifling through your clothes, thinking about who you're going to see and then choosing a certain thing, this is the personal existence view. But if you just have random stacks and you're pulling off the top, there's no personal existence view here because it's just a random selection of clothing, irregardless of who you're going to see and where you're going to go. But again, you might need stacks of clothing for formal attire. You might have 6, 8, 10, 12 different business clothing that you wear in your business setting. And then you have 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 different clothes that you wear in a casual environment. And now you just peel off the top and you're not giving the mind's personal existence view any opportunity to arise in that situation. That's the difference from what I'm explaining to what you're currently understanding. Let's see. I don't see any questions online either. Okay. So let's go to the last part of this, which is how to know when personal existence view is eliminated from the mind. Because as you're doing this proactive training and you're doing all the other things, you're going to need to know when it's actually eliminated. You still would like to stay vigilant at all times, because anytime personal existence view arises, you would like to be able to cut it off and eliminate it. But this is how you're going to know that personal existence view has been eliminated, that you'll deeply understand and be able to explain the fetter, taint, pollution of mind described as personal existence view. So you will be able to describe that pollution because you will have understood it intellectually. You would have reflected on it. You would have been practicing for a long time to cut it off and cut it off. You would have seen the symptoms of it and cut it off and cut it off and cut it off. So you'd be able to explain personal existence view in detail. You'll be able to deeply understand and be able to explain the solution to personal existence view, which is the universal truth of non-self. You'd be able to explain what realizing non-self is. Then you'll be unable to identify anything that is a self or that is you or I. So if I asked you, where are you? You'd be like, I don't exist. Meaning the I doesn't exist. There is a being that is in existence. There is a body, there is a mind that have come together for this existence, but there is no I. There is no me. So if somebody asked you, where are you? Maybe in, you know, you're talking to your mom, you might say, hey, I'm at 7-Eleven, you can come over here, right? Because you're talking to mom. But in your mind, you know that there's no I here, right? So in a situation where you are maybe being asked, you wouldn't be able to identify a self. It just doesn't exist. But of course, in common language, you're going to be talking to people like, oh, I'm over here. Come over here. I'm by the picnic table. Come see me over here. But your mind, when you put some thought to it, you're not going to be able to identify anything that is you. This body is in you. This mind is in you. None of those five aggregates that we talked about this morning, the form, the feelings, the perceptions, the volitional formations, which are your choices and decisions, nor the consciousness. None of that is you. So any feelings that you experience, any perceptions that you have, like your views and opinions, your volitional formations, your choices, decisions, and the consciousness, none of that is you. Those are just five aggregates. They're five collections or five elements. None of that is you. So you wouldn't be able to identify a you because it just doesn't exist. But you'll know there is a body and there is a mind and there is an existence that we call a person, but none of that is you. It's not who you are. You'll no longer experience discontentedness related to or associated with the self-image or self-identity. So in situations where people have said something that maybe normally your personal existence view would get triggered and you would notice this discontentedness that has arisen. In the past, you would notice that when you're sitting at that table with your friends in a social situation, somebody says something about your pimple or your mole. In the past, you might have gotten frustrated. But now when you're in those same situations, you don't feel frustrated or agitated at all. That's how you'll know personal existence view has been eliminated, because when you hear people say something about your culture, your ethnicity, your nationality, your sexual orientation, your job or occupation or anything like that, you won't become discontent anymore. And you'll know that because in the past you used to get discontent, and now those same things are happening and you don't get discontent anymore. And that's how you'll know that this has been eliminated. Okay? Any questions on how to know whether it's been eliminated or not? All right, well, I'll just end by thanking you guys for your dedication and your diligence to learning and practicing, for asking questions, being interested to learn the teachings of the Buddha, because it's helping you, it's helping those close to you, and it's helping all of humanity. As you train your mind to become more and more peaceful, it's helping you, it's helping the people around you, because they're dealing with less and less harm that you might be causing, and it's helping all of humanity become a more peaceful and joyful place. Tomorrow, we're going to start off with the meditation to realize non-self. I'm going to teach it to you, and then we're going to do it together. Then we're going to be doing the same type of talk about the fetters of doubt and wrong behavior and observances. I'm going to explain to you what it is, the symptoms, how to eliminate it, and then how to know that it's actually been eliminated. And then we're going to end up taking a lunch for about an hour and a half. We're not going to have an excursion tomorrow. We'll just have a lunch locally here. And then we'll come back, and afterwards, I'm going to teach you how to know that you've attained the first stage of enlightenment. So that's going to start right around 2 o'clock, where I'm going to teach you how to determine if you've actually attained the first stage of enlightenment yet. I don't think any of you guys have attained that here over the last 5 days. It's just not possible. As you see, there's a lot to learn. But at some point where you're interested to know how to determine if you've attained the first stage of enlightenment, I'm going to teach you how to determine that. And then we'll kind of wrap things up with the whole retreat by doing a closing group discussion. If there's any remaining questions about anything and everything, whether it's the three universal truths, the four noble truths, the eightfold path, what is enlightenment, the natural law of karma, the three poisons, what is merit, any of the things that I've been teaching, or anything that's just a residual question in your mind about anything related to the path to enlightenment, you can ask it in that closing discussion that we'll have. Okay, so thank you all for joining for today, and have a lovely evening, and we'll see you guys tomorrow perhaps. Sawadee khap. Sawadee khap.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember, to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings, a well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.